Hey, Steve here. I wanted to give you a heads up that this episode cuts off early due to a recording issue, but I still wanted to share it with you. Also, if you emailed podcast@aolunderground.com during the past year and did not receive a response, please email me again as I had some email routing issues. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome to AOL. Welcome to AOL Underground.
Please state your handle and the years you were active on AOL.
My name is Ken. I was also known as Dig Dog later on, but not really on AOL. That was more my like IRC handle. I made pen tools. I made password stealer detector. I made something called Pup Tool. Pen tools was the biggest thing that people knew about.
What years were you active on AOL?
I was active from about 96 to the early 2000s. Right around like AOL 5.0, 4.0, 5.0 came out. I didn't spend as much time on there anymore. But I still use dial-up. I didn't get broadband until like 2002 or something just because I was lazy.
You used dial-up until 2002?
A lot of it, yeah. But I stayed on dial-up pretty long. And at first it was only DSL. I'm just not into upgrading. I'm using a 2015 MacBook right now.
Oh, nice. So am I.
Yeah, it's nice.
When did you first use a computer?
I first used a computer when I was 10. So my family moved here from Ukraine. And my uncle gave us his old computer, which was like an XT or something, using DOS 3.3. And I used that compact DOS. And I used that for a couple of years. And then in 94, I got my first brand new computer.
Can you tell me about the first time you got an AOL?
You know, I don't remember that very well somehow.
Did you have your own account or was it like a fish?
Yeah. At first, I had my own account. At first, I got online at school. I just browsed the internet. And then I had a friend in high school, in my first high school, who was already on AOL. He was a little bit ahead of the time compared to me. And he told me about this chat room called War As that I could get software at, which later I learned was pronounced Wares, of course. And that's kind of where it started. And then I think he showed me AOL as well.
What do you think what you saw AOL?
I thought it was amazing. It was a little bit past the time when some of the tools were effective, like the TOS tools were not effective anymore. It was past the time when you could use like a randomly generated credit card number. So I thought I was kind of left behind, or like I was too late to the party. But I thought it was fun. I liked the design. I liked all the like graphics and the intro music and all that. Very cool. Somehow I got into Visual Basic. I was already doing some programming before that. I took Pascal at my first high school until I got kicked out. By the time I was in my second high school, I was already on AOL, but I took a C++ class there.
Why were you kicked out?
I got kicked out because we had these Macs in the lab, and the Macs were locked down with a program whose name eludes me right now, a program that wouldn't let you access the desktop. And I got around that. We had Office installed, so I used VBA to break out the program. And then I showed that same friend how I was doing that. And then he got caught and ratted me out, of course. My parents could not advocate for me because they didn't speak English that well. Well, my dad spoke English pretty well, but he was working all the time. My mom could come into the school and advocate for me, but she couldn't speak English well enough to really advocate for me. I wasn't, by like 10th grade, I wasn't trying that hard. I think the school's administration didn't like me that much to begin with, so they were kind of looking for a reason. And then another thing, someone stole all the mouse balls from the, like in the lab.
The trackball?
Well, like from the bottom of the mouse.
Man, that's a sweet prank, but it got pinned
on
you?
Well, I think it's kind of, yeah, it got pinned on me. I don't think it's a sweet prank because makes the mouse unusable and makes them buy a whole new mouse, unless they replace them, which I... But that's cool because I went to my second high school where I felt more like belonging. It was way closer to my house. And I met this other kid who showed me IRC, who showed me like the emulation scene. And IRC was where I really like made a name for myself, because I made this website called QDB, aka like it. It was a quotes website. It was pretty famous, and nobody knew like who made it.
So just to go back to some of the AOL stuff, I definitely want to hear about the QDB stuff. But got an AOL in about 95, and your friend told you about the Where Is Room, and you started programming. Was it VB5 or VB6?
Oh, it was VB3.
VB3? Oh, okay, cool.
That's I love VB3.
So then how did you start with send keys? Or?
Yeah, I did a little bit of send keys at first. It took me a while to find and to figure out how to use the Windows API, but eventually I did. It seemed really difficult at first. Then I found someone else's module. I think it was Wildy Hack. That guy had like a whole tutorial. He had a great BAS module. And starting with that, I really started figuring out how to do all that stuff. Eventually, I got VB4. I got VB4 because I started dating this girl. Her dad was a programmer. I actually met a girl off of AOL. And we never really dated. We had some attraction, but we never really dated. But her cousin and I dated for a little while. It was funny because I was in 11th grade by now, but her cousin got left behind like 2 or 3 years. So she was still in middle school. She was old enough to date me, but she was still in 8th grade. We didn't really get on that well. She was attractive, but I wasn't crazy about her personality. She was kind of mainstreamish. I don't think she was into me that much either. Her dad and I got on really well. He was a programmer. He burned me a CD of VB4. And that's how I get into like the 32-bit scene. I always liked VB3 the best. VB3 was my thing. And AOL 2.5. Once I got into programming, I didn't really use AOL 3.0 that much. Or I liked 3.0, but I used 2.5 more. Because it was just way faster. It didn't have any rich text stuff. And rich text was like the biggest sieve of exploits.
Yeah, I used 2.5 until they wouldn't let you use it anymore.
And then I took one look at 4.0 and I was like, no fucking way I'm using this. 3.0 was okay because it had nice graphics, very pretty, but 2.5 was the most performant.
So can you tell me about one of your programs, PenTools?
Yeah, so PenTools was, I mean, it's still out there somewhere. It's a basic toolkit. The main window just had three buttons, one for exiting, one for the main menu, and one for quick access to the punter. One was like for turning IAMs on and off. But the rest of it was a buddy list tool for importing and exporting buddy lists. There was a fish management tool. All the basics were in there, but now I'm struggling to remember what it was. It was like four different menus of things.
What's the fish manager tool?
It would just store them for you, store the usernames and passwords, change which account was stored in the login screen so you didn't have to sign in as guest. And if you wanted to sign in as guest, it would put the username and password in for you.
Cool. Can you tell me about the web-based Fisher?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't fancy. It was just like a web page that, you know, looked like an AOL web page and would send the password through a web mailer and say, you know, sorry, thanks, everything went well. I don't even remember what it claimed to be. I just remember it was like in the AOL 4.0 days, so it had like the baby yellow background.
Is this a page that you host? Like, were you hosting this page somewhere, or how'd that work?
I don't remember. It's all very vague in my memory at this point. I've had a few concussions. I've smoked a bunch, so it's all pretty vague. It didn't get much use either. It was only used for like a day or two, and then it wasn't really needed anymore.
Can you tell me about your password stealer detector?
Yeah, so I wrote that. I don't know how useful it was, but it would detect them pretty reliably. It was basically a string scanner. I released it, and then somehow that got me an interview at PC Magazine. I never saw it published, but they interviewed me. I had a conversation with them. I was paranoid, so I went to a payphone to talk to the guy.
Well, I guess I'm kind of interested how it works. So you said it scanned, like it scanned the screen or something?
Yeah, it would scan the binaries. It would look inside the file. You would give it a file to scan, and it would scan it. It wasn't like an in-memory scanner.
Oh, so you would point it to like a directory or an executable, and it would like do a strings or something on it?
Yep.
And what would it look for?
So it would look for things that would make it look like it was an AOL API program. So like get was it like send message and AOL window strings and sending email. And it would look for that. And then it would also look for things that would make it specifically password stealer. And that would probably be subclassing the password box.
Yeah, that'll do it, man.
So sure. I remember I had to work pretty hard to make it tell apart regular progs and password stealers. And then I tested it on a bunch of progs that I had, you know, until it was working as expected.
That's really cool. That's like behavior-based stuff. That's what like, you know, modern endpoint detection response programs do. Like Palo Alto has something called traps, where they'll look to see if you're trying to access certain binaries or write to certain directories or the registry. So like your tool is kind of doing something similar where you're looking for certain like window messages and things like that. So then did you just do programming, or were there other parts of the AOL scene you were in?
I think I was in a distribution group called Arise, and then I think I might have been in, I eventually joined UPSS, which was like the distribution group for UPS. UPS would go from FTP to AOL emails, and then UPSS would actually do the mass mailing and the serving. And they had a really good operation going. They had great graphics, always the, you know, the latest and greatest, well-packaged and all around an amazing group. And I felt like I made it big when I got in there. I'm glad you're reminding me of this, because it definitely brings back some good memories.
So you talked about FTP. Did you have access to like certain FTP distros?
Where no, you... never. It was all like dark magic to me, like all that stuff.
Yeah, I think like the Wares distribution scene, like they would have like the main servers, and then you would like have couriers who would FXP, and then if you were like a distro node, you'd get early access to stuff, and then from there, like the final distributors would download it from the distro servers or something like that.
Yeah, and then they had to rezip it and upload it. I guess they had some proggies for uploading stuff because some of those releases were like 10, 20 emails.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wonder, so I know like in Usenet, if you have like a multi-part archive, they have the SFV, the simple file verification, where they do like the cyclic redundancy check.
Yeah.
I don't recall, or like in the PAR2 files and stuff, I don't recall if those were in the AOL scene or not at the time, but that would have been super handy.
Yeah, I mean, they had zip files. So if the zip's unzipped, you were probably good to go, and then you had to unrar, and then put them all in the same directory to unrar, and then from there on, you usually had the files. Sometimes there were three layers of them. I remember downloading Windows 2000 over dial-up still. And I got Candidate 2, and then Candidate 3, and then the final, the gold. And I remember just being blown away by how stable even those release candidates were. I ran Windows 2000 for years until, I think the first time I was really using XP was in 2004. I went to work at the startup, and they gave me a laptop, and I had Windows XP on it.
Yeah, 98 and Millennium Edition were a joke, man. They crashed like all the time. Windows 2000 was pretty decent.
Yeah, I never used ME. I stuck with Windows 3.11 until 95B came out, because I tried the original release and it glitched out on me, and I was like, I'm going to wait, because this is basically beta testing. That taught me my general life strategy when it comes to software is to never use the first release and wait until it's been, all the bugs have been worked out. So I did the same thing with 98, and I waited until SE with 98, and I stayed with that until 2000 came out. And I trusted 2000 because it was NT based, and I used NT at work.
But is your programming skills from the AOL days and I guess Pascal and BASIC? So did all that?
Yeah, I got my whole career started because I started working at these training places. I was doing desktop support there and like sysadmin stuff. Basically, you know, sysadmin's apprentice. Anyway, I worked at one training place and another training place and then a third training place. Then I did a little bit of freelance website building, and I sucked at it because time management and like
any scope creep?
Yeah, some scope creep, but mostly just fucking around until my boss, whom I also met from AOL, would be like, "Hey, are you actually working on this?" And I'd be like, "Oh, okay, I'm gonna get it done like by tomorrow." And then tomorrow comes around and it's still not done. He actually flew out to try to motivate me in person. So the project eventually got finished.
Wait, was he looking over your shoulder? Because that's like not a way to motivate people.
I mean, for me, that actually is the way to motivate me, is to sit right next to me and be like, "Are you still working?" And then you don't really have to say it because I'll be working. But the second you look away, I'll be on some website reading. So after that, I worked at the startup. After the startup, I got a job with VB specifically. And all my prog experience really helped me out because I got grilled on the VB questions and I nailed all of them because I knew it. So I knew it better than anyone else they interviewed probably. And yeah, that was my first corporate job. I stayed at that for like 5 years.
What did you do with VB? Was it like automating other web forms or automating Internet Explorer?
I did a little bit of that. That was like a small project that I did there. Mostly I was supporting this database application that had a VB front end and an Oracle back end. And it would actually work like straight with the database. It didn't have any layer for, so it had pretty frequent issues with, you know, inconsistent data, which I had to fix. So, but they were always the same. There were a couple of these VB applications, actually. It was mostly very short tasks. I was mostly doing support. I didn't have to do any coding. So I just had to know VB very well and know how to debug things. I had to learn how to do Oracle things a little more.
So going back to AOL, I guess I really wanted to capture like why. So what did you like about making programs for AOL?
I liked how you could hook into the client so well and make it do what you wanted, improve the experience. I also liked the scene. It was very artistic. So it really gave my artistic side an outlet where I could really tweak the interface and make it pixel perfect. And I put a lot of time into that. Eventually, I started writing my own border drawing procedures so that my buttons would look just right. Because I wanted to mimic the Office 97 look, and I was still using VB3 for a lot of things. So in VB3, there wasn't really an easy way to do that, to do like the on-hover buttons that would have like a one-pixel border, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, those are super slick at the time.
Yeah, super slick. I loved it. And like Office 97 was just a masterpiece, and I wanted to do everything that way. I was such a fan. So there was that, and the macro scene was really cool. The fact that everyone was using the same font, and it was such a great font for macros, Arial 10 point, and just showing off my work to other people, that was great because there was a pretty big scene. I'm only now realizing how big the scene was because I remember that everyone in my vicinity knew who I was, and I was like, "Oh shit, Pentools, wow, that's you." Today, nobody seems to remember Pentools at all. And I remember like having that experience with dozens of people, which means I had my own little bubble and lots of other people had their own little bubbles as well. At the time, it just seemed normal to me. And it seemed like, you know, the FTP scene, and I knew about people doing like real hacking on the internet and like writing stuff in C++, you know, writing socket stuff. There were like, I don't know if you heard of Trinop. He did some amazing work.
How do you spell that?
T-R-I-N-O-K.
What's up? Did Trinop do?
Amazing stuff. He wrote password crackers that would do dozens of tries a second, maybe hundreds of tries a second, over the network, writing socket code for AOL, for FTP, for POP3 and IMAP, I think. To me, like VB and AOL seemed small time. Now I realize just how remarkable it was. Even the WARE scene itself, using AOL servers to store all that stuff and just forward around the references to email, you know, what facilitated piracy for so many people and raised a whole generation of people who don't respect intellectual property.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it took me a while to like want to purchase software, like just because based on my AOL days, like it was all free back then, right? When I wasn't 18 yet and stuff. And then like, I think I got to an age where I had more knowledge of information security and the way malicious executables work. And I'm like, well, I can't be running this. It was also like, you know, legal applications stuff. But like, yeah, back then it was just like, I think it was like Bryce. Do you remember Bryce? That was like, I think I heard that was like super expensive, like Bryce 3D.
Yeah. I remember that. I never used it, but I remember.
I think I just downloaded it just because I knew it was expensive.
Yeah, it was great. Even to date, I've only purchased software like a couple of times. I think I bought, I bought Edit Plus just because I used it so much and loved it so much. Still my favorite text editor to date. And I bought Windows Commander, now known as Total Commander, because I was pretty hardcore Windows for a while. Those were my two go-to programs for doing all my web work and like all my file management. And eventually I, you know, left Windows. Like Windows 7 was borderline usable. After that, it was just not worth it. Windows 8 was terrible. Windows 10 is still terrible.
Windows 11 isn't as bad. I definitely think like 7 through, I mean 7, like once you get used to it, it's bad, but yeah, 8 and 10.
Yeah.
Awful.
I've grown to really appreciate consent in software. Consent as far as changing things on my workstation. I mean, to me, it's my workstation. So I really don't appreciate things getting changed without me asking. And it, like, Windows has crossed that line so many times, I'm never going to trust it again. Mac as well. I'm only using this Mac because it has an old version of macOS on it. But I still do all my work in some kind of GNU Linux.
You're not concerned like running out of date software that you could hit a drive by download, a site that will check and probe your operating system and then run an exploit if you're an app patch?
No, not really, because I don't browse that many websites. I mostly browse trustworthy websites. I mostly browse without JavaScript. So I'm not sure how I use an ad blocker. I'm not sure how exactly that's going to happen. Of course, knock on wood. I mean, I run it in a virtual machine, but I still use Windows 95, Windows 98 for some things.
I guess as long as you're treating them as ephemeral, right?
I had a website that was backdoored by someone else for a while through a like WordPress exploit.
How did you know you were compromised?
At some point, I noticed it because it would only happen when you would come through a search engine. If you were coming through from a search engine, it would insert extra code into the web page, but otherwise it would be clean. And then I started looking at the source code on the server side, and on the server side, there was like all the way at the end of the file, there was a bunch of white space and then a bunch of indenting. So it was all like way off screen. There was some packed code and then procedure to unpack it and run it. Not do the expected thing of displaying the WordPress blog.
Yeah, I think there's been some cases where like incident responders and they can't find the problem, and then they look at crontab and crontab looks fine, but they look at crontab like in VI, right, or nano, but eventually they figure out if you go over 100 columns,
yep,
that's what a malware is, right? So
yeah,
you always have to cat that file out, right?
Unfortunately, the episode ends here due to a technical issue, but I want to thank Penn for coming on the podcast and hope to see you all next time.